Silence is golden, especially when it comes to brakes. That's why Napa Silent Guard are built to be one of the smoothest and most quiet brakes on the market. Made with fiber-reinforced shims that eliminate noise for the life of the pad, rubber-coated hardware for a better fit, and quality design that meets and exceeds OE performance. Silent Guard brakes deliver the stopping power drivers demand. Available now at Napa locations nationwide.
Hello again. It is Crew Call here on the Motor Racing Network, taking you into the garage area and talking to the folks to make the race cars go around the racetrack. I'm Steve Post, pit road reporter for the Motor Racing Network, joined by 25-time and championship-winning crew chief Todd Gordon. Hello, Todd. How are you?
I'm great. I got to go to the racetrack this weekend.
Oh, man.
Got to watch a really good ARCA race.
Yep. Absolutely.
Yeah. I mean, I'm going to start the weekend there. Swalich wins. Rain shortened, lightning shortened.
It was crazy.
Who thought you'd see that in the desert? How about Isabella?
Isabella Robusto, if you're not familiar, did not watch the ARCA race, she is a young lady. Her first series start drove right up through the field. She started, you know, back half of the top 10, drove up to third, got schooled a little bit on some late restarts, acknowledged it in a post-race interview with us. But you left there going, whoa, hang on, we might be seeing something here.
So many stories out of that. I thought she drove a great race. I thought you saw her just absorb what Billy Venturini was willing to help her with.
Right, absolutely.
Did a great job there. I'm going to say it wrong. Gio? Ruggiero?
Yep.
Who ended up getting an opportunity because Isabella had a concussion issue last year. Isabella got a concussion, I think, at Hickory in a late model.
Stock race, yep.
And that took her kind of sidelined the rest of the year. And Gio got the opportunity to hop in that late model and showed some talent. Got himself an opportunity in the 20 car for Venturini. And
Place finish.
Yeah, really and led a lot of it. Just, again, there's when you watch that ARCA race on Friday, the future is really bright.
It really is. I mean, if you're sitting there, you're in those development programs, whether it's Toyota's development program, whether it's Rev Racing's development program, or Chevrolet has a development program, you're sitting there going, man, I can't wait to see these. But the only problem is, where are we going to put them?
Yes.
Because there's only so many seats at the top. So it was fun. We got into the ARCA Series, we got the Xfinity Series, and then the NASCAR Cup Series rolling off with the Shriner Children's 500. What's your takeaway from that?
You know, I thought, I got to watch it from the booth and out the window. I thought it was a really good race.
Yeah.
It probably wasn't as captivating because Toyota dominated the
holy.
I mean, you had five Toyotas that led more than 50 laps.
First and really, in NASCAR history,
there were only 14 laps they didn't lead, and that's because, and I'll give them kudos, Ryan Burgundy, I thought called a really good race, left Todd Gilliland out long in stage two, and that's where they ended up leading the, I don't know, whatever it was, 13, 14 laps that Toyota didn't lead. Put himself in a position, they were going to go a lap down, they went a lap down because they didn't get a caution. Took the wave around, got back in the lead lap, and then got a caution and got the, I mean, I thought called a good race there, but the Toyotas were dominant there, but there was a ton of racing going on. If you were there sitting in the grandstands, if you didn't just watch the leaders or the top three or four, you'd find a good race. There was great racing going. I mean, I talked to the guys about this afterwards. There was never a lack of an opportunity to talk about racing. It was going on, although sometimes it was a race for sixth, sometimes it was a race for 16th. But there was really good, there were comers and goers. I mean, Adam Stevens and Christopher Bell gave us a show. They drove from like qualified 15th, 13th, right. 14th, 15th, something like that.
They drove forward and then they restarted, I think 17th?
Well, they ended up, they won stage two.
Right.
Slow pit stop, came out 10th.
Right.
And then we had the cycles of 199, you're short of making it on fuel, but do you want to gamble? 209, you're right on your fuel number. A bunch of guys in the back half came, as we saw. And then 217, everybody had to come. And then when they came at 217 and put four tires on, they're starting 17th. And what I liked is even Christopher, Adam Stevens came on in stage two and told Christopher, he says, take your time, get the 24, the other two are too far gone.
Christopher's like,
well, hold my beer. Yes.
Yeah, hold my beer. Watch this.
It was impressive.
Well,
I looked at the lap times, and he's like 3 to 4 tenths faster than anybody. I'm like, this kid's going to run him down. It's going
to
be fun.
We had a blast. I hope you listened to the MRN coverage. We had a blast on the MRN coverage because we're early in this sequencing, and they Alex and Jeff asked Todd, who do you like? What strategy do you like? And you, I think you might have picked Ross Chastain, yeah, as far as that goes. And then as we're seeing Christopher Bell just gobble up people, we came back to you and said, who do you like now? Strategy is one thing.
Yeah.
Fast race car is another.
I've maintained this all along. I didn't think that, and I talked to him this weekend. I never thought Chad Knaus was like a master strategist. I thought his strategy was on Monday to Thursday.
Right.
He just built race cars that were so darn fast, it didn't matter what he did.
Yeah.
They were just going to drive the front. Like that. And that's a strategy.
Right.
I'm going to work on my stuff.
Well,
when you've got a car like that, it doesn't matter what you do.
Adam Stevens and Christopher Bell had that strategy.
They had that car this weekend.
They had that strategy. Holy cow.
Yeah. I did think the 209, the guys that came at 209, and Ross was the leader of that pack, I thought they were in a good position. You know, they put themselves in a position to take advantage. So, I think Chris Buescher finished second.
Right.
Was a 209 stop guy.
Yep.
There were a couple of them there.
Yeah. No doubt. I mean, it's interesting because the thing of it is a caution at any time makes any of these calls look like a genius. You have James Small sitting out there with Martin Truex Jr. They get a caution midway through this thing.
Oh, if they got a caution anywhere from like 245 to till they pitted, and really their window could have gone to 300.
I thought they pitted pretty quick in that window, but
245 to when they pitted at 272, if they got a caution anywhere in there, they're sitting in high cotton.
They've
got track position, everybody's coming with them, they're in a great position. It turned out, and that's one of those pieces I think that I'd love to talk to our guests about a little deeper here. But James pitted him at 272. And he told him, he said, I think we can get back to fifth or sixth. Yeah. Like, he pitted at a point where he still could recover the day.
Right.
And they did. They ended up back to seventh. They didn't get to fifth or sixth. Right. But
green flag pit stop.
Green flag pit stop forward. And raced his way back to seventh.
Yeah.
The Toyotas were, the Toyotas yeah. had, I mean, for the challenges they had at speedways, mm-hmm. qualifying and just,
yeah.
they were on it this weekend.
Great stuff, that's for sure. Great stuff from RFK. We talked about Chris Buescher finishing second. Brad Keselowski, and we're going to talk to Matt McCall here, finished fourth. Boy, what a great day for RFK.
Yeah. Yeah. It's the type of day that you expect. I mean, honestly, I do. It's this program continues to come forward. And Brad's deep in the points. They had pace. They just got caught up in stuff at the first two races. And that's part of when we put a season together that has two speedway events to start it.
Oh, man,
there's going to be some guys that it's going to jumble up the points position because it's two unknowns. And I would say that Brad's points position didn't align with the performance in the race or the performance in the race car. So, but they were off at Vegas. Be interesting to see where that all came from. But, came back and put a solid race together, second and fourth for RFK.
Matt McCall, who's going to join us here in just a little bit. I want to salute Adam Stevens, 35th Cup Series win. Pretty good numbers right there for
Hall of Famer. Stevens.
Yes, he is.
He is. He is. He's got two championships already.
Championships.
I don't see Adam Stevens and Christopher Bell not winning a championship. Yeah, multiples.
When we talk about, we don't get into predictions as far as that goes. Mm-hmm. I have Christopher Bell and William Byron as really good potential multiple champions in the Cup Series. Somewhere along the way, they're two of my picks for this year because I think both of them are in a spot, not a driver, but crew chief, team operation, everything is in play.
I think they've got to be in your final four.
Yeah, I think so too. And Adam, Adam Stevens' 35th win. It was a big week for Joe Gibbs Racing. We talked about William Sawalich, Matt Ross. They picked up the win on the Arca Menards Series. Joe Gibbs Racing swept it with Chandler Smith, Jeff Mendering. Jeff, the second time back to Victory Lane in the Xfinity Series as well. So.
That was really cool. Hated to see it for Justin Allgaier.
Justin Allgaier, man, leading the race with four laps to go and a tire goes down, stuffs him in the fence.
Which I'm going to defend. Typically, when you have those problems, it's because you're aggressive on tire settings.
Yes, and that place running down under the apron as much as they do.
It shocks his left rear tires.
There's a left rear tire is a is a weak spot. This is Cup Xfinity Series. Left rear tire is a weak spot on these cars, the way that they race at Phoenix.
Well, it's a weak spot because in order to make all the drive you want to make off the corner,
exactly,
you run that tire with no air in it. I mean, there are times that left rear tires at places like this, it would be tinkering on single digits in air pressure.
Really?
Yeah, you would see, you could get down in the nines. Now, I won't say it's necessarily here. It might be 10, 11, or 11 and a half, but it's we don't have 15 pounds of air pressure in that tire.
Yeah.
So you're, and then when you've got a soft tire like that and you're running across that big transition of the dog leg, it's abusive to the construction.
Yeah. Fascinating stuff. A great weekend of racing out at Phoenix. We mentioned it. RFK, a good weekend out at Phoenix. Matt McCall, crew chief for Brad Keselowski. He joins us next.
Warning, this product contains nicotine. Nicotine is an addictive chemical, underage sale prohibited. Introducing Zone Nicotine Pouches, the perfect balance of unparalleled comfort, longer-lasting flavor, and nicotine that satisfies. Whether you're zoning in during the race or zoning out after a tough day at work, Zone gets you there faster and keeps you there longer. Available in 7 flavors and in 6 and 9 milligram strengths. Find Zone at ZonePouches.com and retailers near you. Own your Zone with Zone Nicotine Pouches.
Welcome back. It is Crew Call here on the Motor Racing Network, and let's do it. Let's go to the Zoom line. Joining us from over at RFK Racing, he is the crew chief on the consumer cellular Ford Mustang Dark Horse for Brad Keselowski. Matt McCall joins us. Hello, Matt. How are you?
Doing good. Thanks for having me.
Matt, first off, just congratulations, not only you, but the whole building over there. A pair of top four finishes in Phoenix has got to be a good way to come off the West Coast swing.
For sure. You know, we've had some rough races there, some crashes that probably not in our control. So, yeah, when you can turn that around and get a little momentum, there's no negative to that for sure from a company perspective.
How does the points deficit of two good runs at, you had good pace at Daytona and Atlanta, got caught up in that, really kind of a little off at Vegas, I would say. I thought you manufactured what you could out of the end of the day, but how does that points deficit affect race planning this early in the season?
Yeah, I don't think it does. You know, I think the biggest thing, obviously, with the body change for us and trying to get the balance right and all that stuff has been a little bit tougher than what we wanted it to be. So I would say that not really a panic mode, you know, and obviously the points are still really tight, right? I think they were talking yesterday, I think it's 11 points or something. We're behind the 17 and they're in 16th. So not very many points when you start looking at it right now. Now, if you get 5 or 6 weeks from now and you're still in the same spot, then yeah, you're correct. You have a little different mindset for sure.
Matt, we've had a couple of super speedways, an intermediate track, and now a short track. Are there tendencies? Are there trends? What have you learned about your new Mustang Dark Horse?
Yeah, you know, I think obviously the speedway stuff is it's tough to know if there's a big difference, right? Because really, you're talking about we got Brad driving it, so he makes everything look good at super speedway, no matter what you have. yeah. So we want to think we've gotten better, but in all reality, it's probably the same, you know, and he's just studying and getting better each week on that stuff. Now the Vegas stuff did not go well for us for sure. Until we got the balance closer at the end, we were so far off on balance to start the race. It was hard to tell really where it stacked up. So I think, you know, that's going to take the next couple of weeks to keep trying to accumulate what we need and keep building on that.
So I'm going to keep on that side till we get to races, but, you know, the media keeps making a deal out of 100 races, whatever it is, that since Brad's his winless streak. And the fact he hasn't won at RFK. Do you guys just look, does that even like factor into anybody's thoughts at RFK?
No, you talk about winning all the time, right? But it's not like when's the last time you won. I think that's, I feel like obviously Brad is more than capable. We just haven't been able to put him in enough positions to capitalize on the end of the races, honestly, you know, and I think that's, you know, you work each week on what you think you need to get better on. And that just doesn't something that's like, oh my God, we haven't won. You know, you hear people talk about it, but it doesn't change your mindset and how you approach the weekend. There's not so many hours in a day you can work, you know? So.
Yeah. Yeah. So let's get to Phoenix. My perception sitting up outside the racetrack, last couple races at Phoenix, seems like the track's gotten wider. Like I won't say like crazy, but it's getting to the point where One and two, we've always been able to run the apron. We run the bottom. We can run up a diamond up by the wall and make the runoff. But it seems like three and four to me, we've seen cars be able to move up the racetrack. And even if you get up there, defend or even make runs up there. What do you attribute that to? Is it just age? Is it tires? Is it changing? Where do you think that's coming from?
Yeah, I mean, I think some of it obviously is definitely track changing. You know, I think the application they put on the track, you know, being nothing now technically for, I guess, two or three races, I think is starting to make its toll. And I think the three and four really is dictated by how you get through turn one and two, right? So, I mean, if you run the top of one and two and you have a huge run down the back, I think that dictates your options when you get to three and four. And some of that is this car as well, just where you can place it and where it still makes potential and how you drive it, you know?
When you look at the way that race is unfolding there, and we get into this sequence with 100-ish laps to go outside of the fuel window, what are you looking at when it comes time to decide when to pull the trigger on a pit stop, not knowing that we're going to have another caution and another caution after it? How do you balance that out? When do you pull the trigger on a call like that?
Yeah, I mean, honestly, that it really depends on your track position, right? What you're willing to risk on at that point in time where you're running, you know? And I think, you know, where you're referencing, for us anyway, I think we had gotten up to six. It's like, oh, crap, we've got track position now. Do we take a chance on jeopardizing that and losing every single bit of it? And so for us, it was hard to give that up at that point in time. So we felt like we were capable of staying in that position, maybe being a little further forward. I think that scenario makes it really tough when you start trying to dictate, okay, the race is going to run green the whole time. You know, I think we keep talking about it, the 19's sort of his approach, I don't think it was wrong. It just didn't work out, right? So, like, it's one of those things where it's always a risk. And then it appeared that no one was really crashing on their own. You know, I feel like the potential of the cars must have been somewhat okay for everybody with this package, or that it's a little easier to drive than y'all. I think that probably helps from spinning out as well, you know. So, yes, all those things come into your mind of how you're going to dictate those pitting for sure.
And you talked about it. The aero package that they changed to simplify the diffuser, took the end fences off of it, moved the strakes kind of more centered in it. And adding a little bit of rear spoiler back to it, it made the cars a little less yaw sensitive, right? That they were. That was the intention, was to make it as the rear kind of slid out that you didn't lose rear downforce.
Correct. You're absolutely right. And I think that's, you know, you can actually look at some steering traces of some corrections in the race, not just from our car, but multiple cars are really yawed out. And it's not, there's not really a detriment to, besides making the tires mad, there wasn't like, oh my God, a ton of lap time loss, you know? So I definitely think there's been a change for that for sure, which you got to take into account when you're talking about, okay, is there going to be a caution in the next 100 laps, you know? So.
Yeah. And Goodyear made a tire change. They added, they say, you know, I don't know what they said, tread gauge thickness. It's the cap rubber that you actually race on. Right. And that drove tire temperatures up, and it made it where it was a little, do you think, is there more to get there? Was that a noticeable change? Did you notice any differences?
You know, the my light's clicking off on here. Sorry about that.
That's all right.
You know, the biggest difference on that is interesting to me is the tires are still wearing, but it doesn't really change the grip level that much, which is, you know, very different from how you would normally short track race, right? Like, I say it's not changing. Obviously, you're still losing grip. But, like, if you look at lap times and you pit, you're like, how did we run that lap time? And the tires basically only got, you know, 30 more laps it can go technically off a wear pin perspective. And so, you know, you have that. And then so I think there's more to go. But I think the minimal fall off with as much wear there is what sort of we probably could tweak on a little bit maybe to make it all a better package.
Yeah, it's fascinating stuff. It really is. And we'll see how this goes, not only short tracks with Richmond and Martinsville coming up, but then we'll see what it does on road courses as well with the changes too. So it is going to be fascinating. Now, a short track where we'll not use that package is a place that's been very good to you guys, or pretty good to you guys over the course of time, Bristol this weekend. Bristol on concrete, not on dirt. I would dare say you guys are probably in favor of the concrete over the dirt, just to start off with.
Absolutely. Dirt racing's fine and dandy, but it's not at Bristol.
There's a lot of racetracks we can put dirt on. Bristol's not the one I would pick, right?
Correct.
Yeah. So going back there, having this be a concrete race, I mean, you finished eighth last year, and I mean, and 2 years ago, you were leading the race. You had a tire failure. Your teammate ended up winning. I thought RFK dominated that race 2 years ago. You have to feel good about it and looking forward to having another notebook piece coming to a playoff race.
Absolutely. You know, I mean, there's no negative for that on the Notebook side, you know, and obviously we got the test there, a little bit of wet weather stuff, a little bit of dry testing, you know, with the body change we have. So hopefully that allows us to get pretty close and, you know, start practice and tweak a little bit and get in a good spot for the race.
So speaking of the wet weather, they hosed down the racetrack. From what I heard, you were there and got to run the wet tires there. How was that? Is it daunting? Are you nervous about actually? I mean, we won't race in the rain. I think NASCAR said that right along. It won't be, if it's raining, we're not racing. Right. They'll just use this to transition the racetrack, like we saw at the North Wilkesboro last year. But how was that? And what all is entailed in letting and having a car ready to, what do you have to add your car to have the wet option?
Yeah, you know, so now they've eliminated all the flaps and the flashing lights and all that stuff. Basically, we just have a defogger is what we'll have considered the package for this weekend when the wet tire is an option. As far as the test, they're very interesting. We actually got there and it was ice from the track, technically, not just water. so once it warmed up enough, there was only three cars there. So, you know, we were able to run some laps in the wet, and it looks normal. Obviously the pace is slower. I think the alarming thing is if we have all a full field out there and it's only wet, of how few laps you probably can run before the tires will be completely disintegrated. So I think that's probably the scariest part.
So does it get fast and then go slow because the tires disintegrating or, cause I felt like it at North Wilkesboro, it was actually faster, wasn't it?
It was. Yeah, North Wilkesboro was crazy. It was like, holy crap, we're going faster on wet, but we're on dry at this point in time. Now, Bristol did not seem that way. And you know how it is that we're at a test and they don't have a check on the line. So the drivers are probably not at 100%. So it's probably lap time wise, we never got close to the dries. But, you know, I think that if there was a checkered flag out there, it would probably change that a little bit.
Yeah. Where are we at? Bristol's been a fascinating thing to me because 25 years ago when I came into the sport, it was right around the bottom, root and gouge, you know. We've paved, we've milled, we've ground, we've banked, we've done this, we've done that. This race car, what are you looking for? What's a good race car have to do for you guys to be in contention on Sunday up at Bristol?
Yeah, and you know, this car in general has changed that a lot. I mean, from a perspective of, obviously, the pace changes the travel of your car. If you're running the top or the bottom, and really this car is dictated by how low you can run it, right? So getting that correct is the biggest challenge now at this race. And, you know, with now we're going with resin this weekend, I'm assuming they can get it down if it doesn't rain, and not PJ1, what that difference is going to be. You know, I think, you know, versatility is the biggest thing. But if you look at the 11 last year, he was able to dominate on the bottom, I would say, for most of the race. So I think it really depends on, you know, where we think the line is going to be of what, how you put so much potential in your car.
With the chance of rain, we see that in the forecast Friday, Saturday, Sunday. And then the cooler temperatures. I always felt like this place in the spring, it was harder to get the top to come in because you couldn't rubber it in as well. And I would think with the water, with the chance of rain and that temperature, this race to me always seemed like it raced differently than the August race, which is now a September race, the night race, because we couldn't get the rubber up top like you did. So does that drive you to figure out how to run in the resin more?
I would say yes, for sure. You know, I think that it'll be definitely, you know, on the bottom, like you're saying, weather wise. And, you know, that dictates, like you're saying, for the rubber to get down at the top. You know, and I think even if you look back at last year's race, it never really was dominant at the top, even when it got some rubber. So I think, you know, all that, like you said, comes into play, but I do think there's a chance that the bottom will be pretty significant for most of the race. But you know how it is. Sometimes with 50 to 60 to go, if you can't run the top, then you may not be able to win the race.
Yes, it can go through. That's the cool part about Bristol to me, is that racetrack can transition. We put dirt on it to make it where you had to search a line. Bristol before, you had to search a line. Depending on where the rubber got to, you had to figure out how to run it. And the top could be ripping around the wall, or it could be having to pull back off of it if it got more rubber. I want to go kind of a different piece here and just get your take on it, because I think it makes a big difference. But the new car, it's essentially the same parts for everybody. And we have seen, I feel like we've seen the field get closer. 20th is closer to the win, to the leader than ever. And it becomes hard because track position becomes a challenger. You don't have the layovers anymore. You got to race everybody. Is pit road, how important is pit road now that we've gone to this car?
super important, you know, and not just the stops. I mean, it's just the your roll times, your entries, your exits. All that definitely starts to add up, you know, and then that what dictates some of that is where you qualify and what pit stall you get, right? So, I mean, I think that it's definitely it's crazy important. And then you can take it to the next step of like how pitable do you make your car some of these weeks for performance difference relative to what the pit stops are going to be, you know, like so. You know, obviously you want the perfect package where it's pitable and it's fast, but that doesn't always go hand in hand. So, yeah, it's definitely it's on your mind all the time.
And had a chance last year, Brad had us over to your facilities. You guys, Brad coming on board there, the investment, just kind of describe a little bit the investment that you have put not only facilities, but into getting this element of your team at a better place.
Yeah, I mean, you know, obviously they built a brand new human performance center there, and that you know that's been a really big help for us. You know, I mean, I think and that's what it boils down to. You're always trying to get people that you know the way the sport works in the pit crew world. You know that it's a lot of people that have done it for a long time, but as we transitioned to the one lug, it changed a lot of players on potentially what position they were in at that point in time. So yeah, I think that you know we've continued to try to push to get those guys better each week. And yeah, you know, it's you're judged basically off your last week. So you're only as good as how you were last weekend. So each week is a new week.
Matt, final question for you, and it's a little story. I was over at Southern National or Wake County last year, and somebody was saying, "How's Matt doing?" We're talking about you because you're from over in that area. The guy got a real serious look on his face, and he looked over and he had glasses on. He looked over his glasses. He says, "You know, Postman, he could kill you with his bare hands." And I'm just like, it was weird. It was real random. What he was referencing is your karate and your fitness and your wellness. Where are you at? How's the karate going? How's the CrossFit going? How's all of that going for you?
Yeah, you know, the workout stuff still, I try to make that happen pretty regularly. The karate is definitely not as much as I would like to be. My kids obviously get to go. My dad still has a karate school, so I'm fortunate enough that my kids get to still be around him and do that a lot. But from my perspective, I would like to get back, but golly, I need about 48 hours every day. It would help me a lot.
They just add another couple days in the week, right?
Yeah, it's only an 8-day week, right? Yeah. That's good. Matt, always a pleasure to chat with you. We appreciate the time and look forward to seeing what you guys have at Bristol this week.
Thanks, guys. I appreciate it.
There we go. That's Matt McCall joining us from RFK Racing. Stay with us. More Crew Call in just a moment.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search. Match. With Indeed. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/match. Just go to Indeed.com/match right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/match. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Welcome back. It is Crew Call here on the Motor Racing Network. Hey, if you like what we're doing, I need a favor from you. I need you to like this. I need you to subscribe to our channel and share it with everybody. So share this program and let people know what we're doing here on MRN's Crew Call. Todd, it is fascinating. We'll go a little behind the scenes inside baseball here. We had lined up Matt McCall because we know he's good at Bristol. We got the bonus of them running well at Phoenix. You're never shocked when they run well, but boy, it's nice when they deliver two top four finishes coming into a show as well.
Yeah, a solid day for RFK. And, you know, one that they got back on track. I think like Matt talked about there, they were off on their balance to start Vegas. Hey, you bring a new body.
Oh, yeah.
And Toyota saw this as well as Ford did. I think they had potential, but I didn't think they hit their, you got to get data to understand what you got to race. And with the limited practice we have, you know, he manufactured a decent run of Vegas, but a solid second and fourth, well-called races and good potential in their cars.
Yeah.
I look forward to this weekend. Yeah. I mean, Brad's really good at Bristol. Mm-hmm. He should have won a couple years. Well, I say he should have won. They had a tire failure. Right. That may have been why they were so fast.
Well, yes. Exactly.
So, but he was in a position to win. Teammate did. Mm-hmm. And I think that they will be contenders this weekend.
Yeah, Brad's a three-time winner at Bristol, so it's more than just that race a couple of years ago. He's always been really, really good there. And Chris gets around there well. Chris Buescher gets around there really well also.
And really, if you think back, even before Brad got involved with RFK, this is a place that they've always, I mean, Ricky Stenhouse back in.
That's right. You're right.
Really had good runs there. I felt like this is a place that RFK understands, and they've only added to that with Brad coming on board.
No doubt. What else are you going to be looking at when we go to Bristol this week?
It's going
to
be interesting how, I mean, Matt brought it up, whether they get the resin sprayed down or not. I think this is a racetrack that, and we talked a little bit about it, but I think it needs to get warm enough to take rubber up top for the top to come in. Yeah. And I don't know that we're going to see that this weekend, but if we've got rain earlier in the week, I would think they'll get resin down before the rain. Yeah. But the resin, if we get resin on the bottom, I think it's going to be kind of an old school race. You're going to have to run around the bottom. I don't know if we're going to get the top where it's dominant. Mm-hmm. Maybe we'll get it where by the end of the race where you can race up there and maybe make passes. But it's going to be interesting to see where it is. I feel like how wide that resin spray gets dictates what lane gets to be dominant.
If they
get it wide enough where you can get the rights on it, it's as we saw last year with Denny. When they get it wide enough, that's the piece of spray. If the spray is 3 or 4 feet wide where you can't get the right side tires into it, it's just the left, then the top kind of comes to it. But if you get it 5 feet out there where you get the right sides in that resin as well, ripping around the bottom is going to be the way to go.
Ripping around the bottom is really, really good until you get into lap traffic. And then
it's old Bristol.
Then it's
just got to move out of the way.
Then it's old Bristol. Who knows? It's Bristol, baby. That's what Junior said, anyhow. So it is going to be fun. That is for sure. Motor Racing Network will be in Bristol for the NASCAR Craftsman Truck Series. It is the WeatherGuard Truck Race coming up Saturday night at 7:30, and then the Performance Racing Network has the call for the Food City 500 NASCAR Cup Series race. We have weekly programs here: NASCAR Live, the Tuesday Night Tradition. NASCAR Live Wide Open, it's the Tuesday Night Tradition, plus some additional content. NASCAR Coast to Coast, where Kyle Rickey and Chris Wilner focus on the roots of the sport. Wing Nation talking sprint car racing, and of course, Crew Call here. And also want to remind you, the MRN podcast series. NASCAR Live presents 2004 Changing History, another episode dropped this week. And it is great the way that the stories are told with the MRN calls in the middle of it. Our producers have done a wonderful, wonderful job with this. So good times, that is for sure. Todd, always good to hang out. It was good to hang out in Phoenix.
Yeah.
And good to hang out. Good to bring Matt McCall into the conversation today. Always fun to hang out here on Crew Call.
Yeah, definitely a great week to kind of come in between these two events. Looking forward, be interesting to see where this all plays out the next month.
Good times, that's for sure. Yeah, because we're road course racing.
Yes.
After we get done at Bristol. So it is good times in NASCAR, that's for sure. He's Todd Gordon. I'm Steve Post. We appreciate you so much for joining us this time on MRN's Crew Call.